and welcome back to the I'm Moving to Italy podcast. This is Nathan Heinrich.
And I'm Vera Sarzano.
And we would like to welcome you back to Season 6, Episode 13. Ciao, Vera.
Ciao, Nathan. 13 is a lucky number in Italy.
Well, do you know that it's my favorite number?
Because you're Italian.
I wish that was the reason I liked the number 13 so much. It's because I was born on the 13th, in spite of the fact my mom wanted me to either be born on the 12th of February or the 14th of February. I was born on Friday the 13th. So, Vera, why is 13 a lucky number in Italy?
I think it's because of the schedina. So it was like, I think it still exists, but it was very popular a few decades ago. It's a game it's a gambling game, of course, related to the soccer championship. So every Sunday there were 13 matches because there were 26 teams playing against each other. So basically you had 13 games, right, every Sunday. And you can pick the winner. Well, you can decide if one team wins, the other team wins, or it's a tie. So you sort of fill this form, and it's one if you think the first team will win, X if it's a tie, or two if it's the second one, right? So at the end of the weekend, you have all the matches finished and done, so you check, and ho fatto 13 means you win a lot of money. So if you guess all 13 results, so that's why you became a millionaire when we had liras, so that was not huge, but still a lot of money. You became a millionaire if you guessed all the results of the soccer games.
Oh, that's interesting. You have a different Friday that's sort of like a superstitious day, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Porta sfiga, that brings bad luck, is Friday the 17th.
It's interesting. They're both odd numbers and they're both on Friday. Who knows? Well, Vera, we have a very interesting interview today with a lovely couple who moved to the region of Puglia. But before we get into that, I just want to say that Vera and I are recording this episode early. And I know, you're all probably already sick and tired of Vera and I talking about this upcoming trip. But it's still an upcoming trip because tomorrow morning, Alessandro and I leave for Tuscany, so we're recording this early before we go, so we still haven't, even though in the last episode we were talking about we were going to see Vera, it's just only been a few days since we recorded our last episode, we still haven't gotten down to Tuscany yet, so it's not going to be until our next episode that Vera and I talk about what happened on our trip, but so we're still anticipating this wonderful trip to Tuscany to see Luca and Vera.
And do you want to talk about it during our conversation?
Yeah, I think that would be a really interesting topic today for our Italian conversation. And there's a couple of things I wanted to ask you about. So why don't we jump right into that, Vera?
Mm-hmm.
We arrive in Tuscany tomorrow, and I can't believe it's finally happening. So what are we going to do our first night there, Vera? Do you have plans, or are we just going to play it by ear?
Well, for the first night, obviously, I have already booked a table for four at my favorite restaurant. I've told you about this place before several times. I guess you're sick and tired of hearing about it, and I think it's about time you guys try it. So are you happy? Are you excited?
Of course I am. Okay, but I've got another question for you. So in your opinion, what are three things that you recommend that I taste while in Tuscany that I absolutely must taste and I shouldn't leave Tuscany without tasting?
Okay, the first one is the very reason you coming here, new extra virgin olive oil. So we talked about that. This time of the year is just amazing, like so good. And then meat. Tuscany is famous for its meat. It can be steak, like the famous Fiorentina steak. It could be wild boar. We eat a lot of wild boar here. Or cinta senese. Now, I'm saying this in Italian because you don't have a translation for that. It's a special, well, it's pork meat. But cinta senese, it's pig. And it's called cinta, which means belt, because it's all white with a black stripe on the back. It's the cutest poor pig. Anyway, so meat. And finally, red wine. You cannot leave Tuscany without red wine. Nobile di Montepulciano, Chianti Classico, and other local reds.
Now I'm totally hungry. And I can't wait. But just to clarify something, Veta, before we start our Italian version of this conversation, I wanted to be really clear. While I am excited about the olive oil, yes, that's true. And I'm looking forward to tasting that and the meat and the wine and anything else that we end up eating, I'm really coming to Tuscany to see you, not to eat.
Aw, thank you.
The food is just icing on an already very beautiful cake.
Okay, so before we say all this in Italian, today I only have one word for you, just one that you have to, you know, listen very carefully for, and it's li, li, L-I with an accent, li. So it means there, but we also use it in an idiom, I would say. Oh, I don't know. It's just another way of using li, and it's li per li. Doesn't that sound so funny? Say it. Li per li.
Li per li.
Yes, li per li. So we use it to say play by ear or off the top of my head. And it's like with no previous thoughts about it, with no advance, you know, planning or things like that. Li per li. On the spur of the moment. That's what it means. But it sounds amazing. Li per li. I love it. Sounds like a little song. So you will hear li per li a lot. And then there's an idiom, okay, a very funny one, which is non stare nella pelle. Non stare nella pelle. So if we translate it literally to English, is I don't fit my skin. And it's like, what's that? Kind of creepy. But it actually means I can't wait. I'm looking forward to something. So I'm so excited. I'm about to explode, you know, and my skin cannot contain all the excitement and emotion that I have. Non sto nella pelle.
Yeah, okay, that would be kind of like our version of like, I'm jumping out of my skin, I guess.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Very good, okay. Well, here's the Italian version of our conversation. Vera, domani veniamo lì. Arriviamo in Toscana. Non ci posso credere, finalmente. Che cosa faremo la prima sera? Hai già programmato qualcosa o vediamo lì per lì?
Che bello, non sto nella pelle. Per la prima sera ho già prenotato un tavolo per 4 persone nel mio ristorante preferito. Ti ho parlato tante volte di questo ristorante e voglio farvelo provare. Sei contento?
Certo che sono contento, ma ho un'altra domanda. Quali sono le 3 cose che ci consigli di assaggiare in Toscana?
Ah, sicuramente l'olio nuovo. In questo periodo è eccezionale. Poi la carne, la bistecca, ma anche il cinghiale o la cinta senese sono buonissimi qui. E sicuramente il vino, Nobile di Montepulciano, Chianti Classico e altri rossi locali.
Ah. Adesso ho fame, Vera.
I know, I'm hungry too. Tomorrow.
Domani. Ci vediamo domani. Okay, Vera, as promised, we have a wonderful interview with Lisa and John from Essex in England. And we're going to hear all about their story and the challenges that they've faced and overcome, and about this dream that they've created together. And it's a really interesting story. Now, this is the first time that I've done an interview with someone who did the whole interview on their phone because they had locked up their laptop and put it in the safe, and then they couldn't figure out how to break into their safe. And you'll hear in the interview why they needed a safe in the first place. So if there are any sound issues, just be aware that Lisa and John very graciously agreed to do this interview from their villa with the Trullo down in Puglia. And so if there are any sound issues, I know that you'll be forgiving of them. But anyway, here is my interview with Lisa and John from England, now in Puglia. Are you newlyweds?
We're quite newlywed. We've been together for 5 years, but we got married in Gretna Green, of all places. I don't know if you know about Gretna Green. Yeah, Gretna Green is a really famous place. It's just over the border between England and Scotland. And hundreds of years ago, if you had to be 18 or maybe even 21, actually, to get married in England. So youngsters who wanted to get married eloped and would hair up there in a horse and a carriage, just get over the border and get married. The marriage ceremony was literally a couple of minutes before the relatives could catch them and stop them from doing it. So it's quite a traditional, gorgeous little place to get married. So yeah, we did that in January.
Oh, congratulations. You're really newlywed.
We are.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, so I've heard of Gretna Green for sure, but I didn't know that that was the story behind it. Thanks for sharing that. That's very interesting. So you kind of did what the teenagers do.
Absolutely. We think we're still young at heart.
Well, sounds like you are to me. That looked like a really fun ceremony, and I loved it. You two clearly know how to have a good time. Okay, so we're going to get into how you ended up in Puglia, but I want a little backstory so we know your story, where you came from, if you're willing to share that with us.
So I've lived in Essex for my whole life, was born there and then grew up there. As a child, actually, I always wanted to be a teacher. My granddad was a teacher and so was my uncle. So it's kind of in the blood. So I loved languages at school. They didn't give us the choice of Italian. So I did French and German at school, did them up and into A level. And I really wanted to be a languages teacher. But when I got into the sixth form, I went to a comprehensive, and so many children there were being forced to learn a language and didn't want to. And I thought, do you know what? I don't really want to spend my whole life trying to force a language down children's throats. So at that point, I changed my mind and decided to be a primary school teacher. So I went to Cambridge University and did my degree there, my teacher training degree, and qualified and started teaching straight away, and gradually moved through the ranks, made it up to head teacher. And yeah, we've just retired. So we retired this summer. And yeah, I've had enough of school now. I'm just, I'm done with work. So yeah, it's quite lovely.
You and John, how did the two of you meet?
Right. So I have a brother who lived in the same village where John was. And John and my brother had been friends for about 15 years, I guess. But I didn't see my brother that often. I only really saw him for family occasions. He'd come over Christmas, Mother's Day, Father's Day, things like that. Anyway, unfortunately, my brother got diagnosed with a brain tumour. Oh gosh, it must be 6, maybe 7 years ago now. And moved in with my mum and dad. Now, I was living next door to my mum and dad at the time. And so I used to take my brother, when he was well enough, to Tollsbury, to the village where he was living, to sort things out, to get him things to bring over to mum and dad's. And while we were there, he introduced me to John, who's just one of his mates who ran the local garage. And I have to say, at the time, I thought he was completely inappropriate and I don't know how to put it politely, really.
Just say it.
Just a bit of a twat, really. But, we got chatting and what have you. Anyway, nothing came of that. And then, unfortunately, my brother got really poorly. So he had radiotherapy and some chemotherapy, but the chemotherapy really affected him, to the point where he ended up in a psychiatric unit. Now, John had been over to my mum and dad's a few times because they're both obsessed with classic cars, and they used to go to a classic car meet every month. And all of a sudden, Mark wasn't around and John didn't know where he'd gone. So I think he contacted mum and dad to try and find out what was going on and said he wanted to see Mark. And so I said to mum and dad, oh, do you know what? This place where Mark was really just really not nice. I said, I think he should come with me first time just to kind of, you know, find out what it's all about. So we met at the psychiatric unit. There's a lot, really. And just kind of started going to see Mark together, really. And we just got on really well. I was in a very unhappy marriage. So was John. So we got to know each other a little bit. And then my brother had a flat where John was living, and mum and dad needed to sell it because Mark wasn't going to be going back home. And he'd been doing some renovations, bless him. And there was a horrible old tin bath in the just inside the front door. You couldn't even really get in. So mum and dad were like, what are we going to do with it? You know, it's two stories up. And I said, you know what? I'll message John because there must be a man with a van or someone who can just come and get rid of this thing for us. Anyway, I messaged John and said, do you know anyone who can help us out? And he said, oh, I'll do it. I've got a van, you know, it's not a problem. So we met there on the 2nd of January in 2019. And I don't even know what happened that day, but something happened. And when we got home that night, I sent John a message saying, thanks so much for your help today. And before we knew it, the message got into, we should meet up, you know, we're both miserable. Let's go and have a good time. And yeah, so really bad. You know, we were both married at the time, but you know what? I'm so glad we did it because it's been the best thing ever. So the first thing we did was buy a boat. We lived on a boat, an ammunition barge. It didn't have an engine, so it didn't go anywhere, but it was huge. So it had three double bedrooms. It was absolutely beautiful. And that was going to be our life plan. You know, we were just going to live on this boat. And yeah, that was going to be us. So we moved in the very beginning of October. But in the meantime, we'd booked our first holiday together. And I'm always on Facebook and Instagram and things, and I'd seen lots of photos and things of Trulli. So I had booked us through Airbnb a Trullo in Cisternino to go and stay in for a week. So we'd been on the boat for a couple of weeks. Off we went to Puglia. I can't even tell you how many miles we travelled that week. We went everywhere. Everywhere there was to go, we went. We went up to Trani, we went down to Gallipoli, and we literally just fell in love with Puglia wholeheartedly. And I don't know if you do, but whenever I go on holiday or whenever we go anywhere now, you always have to look in estate agents' windows just to see what's around. And we were just overwhelmed by how cheap property prices were here. We were like, this can't be real. Now, I, for as long as I can remember, genuinely, I can't even remember when I didn't dreamt of owning an olive grove. I just have this affinity for olive trees, and it was just a dream of mine. And John had always wanted to live abroad as well. So we kind of got back to England, and we'd got various websites and things of estate agents. And it was just a little bit of fun to start with. You know, we'd sit down with our computer and, oh, look at that. Look, that looks gorgeous. Look at them. And actually, after a month or two, we thought, no, do you know what? We could do this. We could do this, because John was selling his house. So I'd already sold mine, and the money that I got out of that, we bought the boat with. But we knew that we were going to have some money from John's house sale as well. And so we started looking in earnest. Then, of course, COVID hit. So we did manage to get out in the summer between the two lots of COVID, which was nice. And we just drove around, really, just being nosy down all these little country roads and what have you. But our Italian at the time was absolutely non-existent. So all of the private sales, we couldn't have anything to do with. We found one gorgeous little Trullo, didn't we, near Alberobello, and it was deserted. So we jumped the fence and started having a look around. Anyway, this old boy turned up, bless him, and it was his, but he lived next door but one. He didn't speak any English. We didn't speak any Italian, but actually he could speak a bit of French. So I had a bit of a chat with him in French, and we were chatting away, and he said that there was an English couple who lived nearby. So he tried to explain to us where this English couple lived. Well, we never would have worked it out, would we? I think in the end, we got a phone number for them. And actually, we're in touch with them now, and we're seeing them tomorrow morning, actually, for breakfast, aren't we, Martina? So that's quite lovely. Anyway, we've just been looking around. And then we were looking on a website one night, and John said, oh, I love this one. Oh, absolutely. That is, it's lovely. And I was looking at it. I don't know if you're aware, but the photos that Italian estate agents do are shocking. Nobody tidies up their house. You take it as it is. And actually most houses are just a table with about 20 dining chairs in. That is how Italians sell their house. And I was looking at these photos. Yeah, it's okay. It was like, no. Honestly, I love it. Because John obviously, well, he was a mechanic, a race engineer, and has a few old cars. And having a garage was an absolute necessity. And this one had one. So we got in touch with the estate agent. This was in the middle of COVID, and said, you know, we're quite interested in this house. And he said, oh, it's fine. You can't come out and see it, but I'll do you a video. So he came, didn't he, and did a video, about a 20-minute video of the land. Go on, you can have a little chat.
About four or five clips, because his iPhone only had so much storage and we had no signal. Well, we didn't have any signal out here at all, do we?
No.
Phones. So, you know, about five videos. So we were sitting in the boat watching these videos. And in the meantime, we'd also found the property listed by the family.
On a different website.
On a different website, and realised it had two bedrooms, more than we thought it had. So, that's it, fantastic. So by the time we've done our Google Earth watching and everything else, we thought we're going to put a bid in on this. So we did, didn't we? We actually entered an offer without actually ever visiting it, and ended up buying it. Blind over the internet.
So that's us. We're a bit mad. It has a Trillo on the side of it. It's very beautiful. So it's a villa with a straight through kitchen, diner, living room, and then we've got 5 acres of olive grove, and it's absolutely beautiful. And now actually we've bought next door another 12 acres which has got a ruin on it that we're gonna do up, not immediately, but yeah, that's just sitting there at the moment. So that's really, so yeah, we bought this place and we'd booked to come out for 3 weeks in the summer of 2021, but the sale hadn't finalized by then. And we were like, we haven't booked any accommodation because we just assumed the house would be ours. Anyway, the family said, oh, it's not a problem, because this was just their country house, their summer house. You can stay as our guest. So, you know, you can have the house to yourselves for 3 weeks. And yeah, and actually we've been adopted by our Italian family and we go out with them all the time. And yeah, it's just so lovely. So we have an Italian family.
Wow, I love this story. So you're talking to me right now from inside this Trullo /villa.
We're in the villa at the moment. The Trullo is just, it's attached, but we can't get through to it from the main house. We have to go out and in. But no, it's beautiful.
What a great story. So you're one of those few people, brave people, the two of you, who during COVID, you bought a house in Europe while you're on a boat in Britain.
Yeah. It sounds mad when you put it like that.
It sounds like a great book or a great movie. I hope you sell the rights to this story because this is great. So it's been 2 years now, or probably a little over 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And you got married at the beginning of this year.
Yeah.
So your life is unrecognizable.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you know what? So many of our friends say, oh, you're so brave. We could never do that. Well, you could, you know, it's not been that difficult. If you want it, it's perfectly reachable. We just haven't looked back, have we? Our only frustration now is having to do this flipping Schengen shuffle, because we don't want to be in the United Kingdom anymore. But since Brexit, yeah, things are a bit difficult. So we have already applied for residency once, but we got that turned down because when we applied, we were trying to think ahead and we were trying to get residency in place so that when we retired, we could move out here full time. But my pension obviously wasn't being paid in yet because I was still working, and because the passive income wasn't actually there. I had documents proving that it was coming, but because it wasn't actually coming into the bank regularly, they just said no. So We are going to apply again in March. And fingers crossed, see what happens this time. But we're not going to give up. We're going to keep applying until they say yes and let us in permanently.
So just to be clear, because there are people from other parts of the world who've never heard of the Shenzhen Shuffle. They've never even heard the word Shenzhen.
Right.
So I want to take a moment to explain a little bit. Now, I know that Brexit has just wreaked havoc on the plans of so many Brits. Who saw either France or Italy or Spain or somewhere in Europe, a warmer climate as sort of their retirement plan. And some of them had already purchased homes. They didn't think they needed to have residency or citizenship, but they purchased a property. And so it's just been an absolute disaster for many people. So you fall into the category of someone who post-Brexit, you buy property in Italy. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't have all the same rights that you had when the UK was part of Europe. So you lost all those rights. And so now, can you explain a little bit to anyone who doesn't understand what you mean by the Shenzhen Shuffle?
Okay, so at the moment, we are only allowed to be in Italy for 90 days out of every 180, and it's on a rolling system. So one day out gives you another extra one day in. So I now have this amazing calendar on my phone. So I put in all of the trips that we do so that we make sure we leave before we need to. So yeah, so at the moment we're doing a couple of months here, back home for a bit, another month out here, and just backwards forwards. So you know, it could be worse. We still get 6 months of the year here, but you know, our dream is to be here all of the time, and that's not possible until we can get, you know, an actual elective residency visa. That's the one we're going for, the ERV. Oh, I forgot to mention, we obviously don't have any house in England anymore, because I sold my home that I had with my ex, and John sold his. We bought the boat, obviously. We sold that to buy this, and so now when we're back in England, we're living in a Winnebago.
So you don't have the boat anymore. That's so you
no,
literally
we don't
are
have the boat anymore. No, we're living in a Winnebago, so that's all good fun. So there are a few countries that we could potentially go to, such as Albania. But to be fair, you know, at the moment, my brother's poorly. He's in a care home now. We've got five children between us who are all grown up and doing their own thing. But, you know, and I've got my mum and dad still alive. My dad's quite poorly at the moment. So actually, it could be worse. You know, it is nice. We've got that. We still touch base with them really regularly. So, yeah, I suppose timing wise, it's right, even though it's frustrating.
And like you said, you're reapplying with probably a very, very solid chance of getting your residency. Yeah.
I mean, the passive income requirements, the amount that you need in passive income, that the cost of living here is so ridiculously cheap compared to being at home. You know, we know that we can easily afford to live here. We've got no mortgage. You know, we bought this place cash, we bought next door cash, so we have no rent, no mortgage, so the money that comes in from the pension is, you know, we need a bit of food and a bit of electricity, that's it. But hey ho, I suppose nothing's meant to be easy, is it?
You'll get there, I'm sure of it.
No, we will. Sure. We're not giving up.
When you fly back to Great Britain to spend time with family and be with your parents and so on and so forth, you're not driving, you're flying, right?
No, we drive.
You drive.
We've flown occasionally, but we mainly drive, because we've obviously brought lots of our furniture and cars and all kinds of things from England. So we have a van, and how long's the trailer? A 7 meter long trailer that we've brought all kinds down with us, backwards and forwards. Oh yeah, we bought a tractor. Oh yeah, you see, we have had a bit of a disaster. So last Christmas, We'd started getting things really sorted here. We'd come out in the summer. We'd bought a tractor over with us for the olive grove, and life was lovely. We'd bought ourselves a beautiful Scandinavian wood-fired hot tub. You name it, we were living our best life. And then a week before we were coming out for Christmas, I think it was my last day or two before breaking up from school, we'd had a plumber fitting central heating in the house. And he messaged me, oh gosh, at about 7:45 on this morning and said, I'm really sorry, I've just turned up at the house. You've been broken into, everything's gone. They'd broken into the garage, they'd stolen the tractor, your motorbike, they'd taken the hot tub, loads of John's tools, his welders, they'd been inside. We had built this huge TV wall, an IKEA one, and all of the individual bits were screwed to the wall. They'd taken that, they'd taken the telly, they'd taken the oven, they'd taken our bed and our mattress out of our room. So last Christmas we came out to basically, there was just nothing here really, was there? So we're like, all right, okay. You know, it's a lesson learned, I guess, really. So now we've got the vigilanza, we've got alarms, we've got video cameras, you name it, we have it. But no, so that was a bit of a down point. But no, now we've had to bring more stuff backwards and forwards. We've had to buy another tractor. We've got that here now, locked securely away. So we drive, and we've also got two cats, like I was saying. So at the moment, they're doing backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards with us. So they couldn't fly. It would be ridiculously expensive. And yeah, so it takes us 3 days to drive down. We stay in some beautiful places on the way and have a, you know, a look around. We found some beautiful vineyards up in Emilia Romana where we stay. And yeah, Strasbourg, we're staying in Strasbourg when we go back this time to see the Christmas markets. So we try and make the journey a holiday as well. Try and make the most of it, don't we? And just see what we can see, really, have a little adventure.
I've never seen olive trees that are more beautiful. Please tell me that some of the olive trees that you have are some of those old, beautiful ones.
We've got some real oldies, don't we? Just beautiful, where they've got split trunks and they're just so stunning. Absolutely, the whole area is just beautiful. We've just done a very mini olive harvest. So we came out 2 weeks ago and the olive trees were quite laden, but because obviously we weren't here before that, a lot of them had already fallen to the ground. So we spent 2 days, didn't we, harvesting what we could. And we've got a neighbour opposite us who's Italian. Again, he's brilliant for learning Italian because he speaks no English, so you just have to try and get by. And he took us to the mill, didn't he, with the olives. And yeah, it's just, yeah. So that was our first mini olive harvest. But next year we'll be a bit more prepared. We'll put the nets down much earlier and yeah, it'll be all good fun. Now we've got loads of beautiful trees. We haven't just got olives. We've got lemons. We've got pomegranates. We've got almond trees. What else have we got? Oh, figs. We've got so many figs we don't know what to do with. We've got cherries, pears. It's absolutely stunning. We've got the Apulian aqueduct near us as well, the cycleway. So the whole area is just stunning.
It really is a really very different feeling and looking place. It feels to me, at least, more like Greece than Italy.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the towns look quite Grecian, don't they?
So one of the things that was kind of sad to see when I was there were all the dead olive trees from that olive.
Yeah. It's further, a lot further south than we are. And I mean, I'd like to say, I hope it's contained now. I think one or two trees in the area have had it, but definitely around us, all the olive trees are really healthy, aren't they? So fingers crossed. We have to keep the ground, the land around the trees, absolutely clear of grass and weeds, because obviously it's the bug that lives in those that carries the xylella disease. And they do fine you, actually, that they send drones and helicopters over all the time to make sure that everyone is sticking closely to those rules, which is great.
But I'm glad that your big, beautiful trees are still healthy and strong. And
the land that we've bought next door is completely different. It's literally just a wall separating the two properties. But next door, well, we've called it Rock Garden because it is just wild Mediterranean scrub and huge rocks. You couldn't really But we love it. It's so beautiful, and it's got so many beautiful wildflowers on it. In fact, it's got some really rare orchids that people come to Pooliard specifically to see, and all kinds of other trees. It's got some oaks, doesn't it? And more olive trees. It's just stunning. It's got verbascums everywhere. It's just, absolutely. It's like being in two completely different places, isn't it? We're here and then we walk next door and transported into absolute. Yeah, it's just stunning. I don't know what your weather is like, but today we've got about 18 degrees, which is very gorgeous. 2 days ago, we had -1 and we had some snow. Just like, come to Italy, they say, it's really lovely and warm. And then you arrive and it was freezing, wasn't it? But so the day before we were in t-shirts, then we had 2 days actually, didn't we, of it being really cold, hail, snow, you name it. And then it's beautiful again.
It doesn't make sense, but I think I would take an occasional snowy cold day in Puglia over rainy, wet, northern climates, like where you're from originally, right? Oh,
honestly, where winter lasts about 8 months. I'm so looking forward to going back to that.
I have a lot of friends up where you're from, and it's just amazing how it affects your mood, your life, your mental well-being, even the constant rain and cloudiness. And that's why I think Brits more than anyone appreciate the good weather, the warm, sunny weather in Italy, I think more than just about anybody.
Absolutely. I mean, I am a sun worshiper. I just love the sun. I love being warm. And I do, mental health is a big thing for me, especially with teaching and stuff like that. I've had some really dark times, but no, just being out here, it's good for your soul, and it's good for you just generally, your health wise, isn't it? Your mental and your physical health. I'm not going to lie, if my parents had bought a house in Italy when I was their age, I would have been very hard to get rid of. So a few of them have been. John's sister has been. I'm sure now that we're more settled, I think a few people have thought, after the robbery and, we'll let you get settled and things again. But I think we'll be very busy.
Fantastic.
I really wanted to get my mum and dad out, but now that my dad's poorly, I'm not quite sure that will happen, because it was always a dream of his to have somewhere abroad, and it was just a dream that he never realised. So our boat was called Carpe Diem. We didn't give her that name. She just came with that name. And I think, especially with what happened to my brother and what have you, you literally have to seize the day, don't you? And if you've got a dream, you've got to do it now, because none of us know what the future holds, not to be morbid, but you don't. So while we've got our fitness and, our health and things like that, I think the timing of this has just been perfect, really. I can't explain to you, I've lived in England my whole life. I'm 55 now. I've never felt more at home anywhere than I feel here.
Lisa and John, I don't know if you can still hear me in the background.
I'm still here.
Lovely to meet you. Lovely to meet you. Thank you so much for taking the time to share your story with us today. This has just been very inspiring, and I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, well, when we've applied for residency next time and we get the outcome of that, I'll drop you an email and we can have another catch up.
Please do that. I look forward to it.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye. Ciao.
Veta, I don't know about you, but I find Lisa and John's story to be very, very inspirational.
They are. And it's just the biggest accomplishment, following your dreams. I love what they did.
I'm very excited to hear what you have to share with us about this region. And I'm also excited to hear your thoughts as an Italian about this region, Veta. So take it away. Tell us all we want and need to know about Puglia.
Okay. First of all, I'm going to share my personal opinion. I love Puglia. I went there a couple of times. Actually, the first time, I was a child, I don't even remember, but then the first time as an adult, I can remember, it was my first summer job. I spent almost 4 months there working in a resort. I was, babysitting kids and then doing shows at night with the other animatori, that's how we call them, like in Italian resort. So we were doing all kind of shows and jokes, and it was so fun. And the sea there, the sand, the white sand, the sea. I was in the Salento area. It's just so beautiful. And I love the people there. I just love it. So I went back a few years later and then on vacation a few more times. And it's just an amazing region. I love their food. I love their accent. I like it. I like it a lot.
Were you working with mostly Italians or were there a lot of foreigners there as well?
No, that was only for Italians. Because Italians love that. Honestly, it's a kind of holiday that I hate. I would never do that. But Italians love to go to a hotel, a resort, where everything is scheduled. You know, there's some stretching or yoga or Pilates in the morning. And then all the kids join. In that case, me and my friend Alessia, who were the babysitters. And we had the kids playing for like 3 hours. Obviously swimming and then some games or coloring a little bit, you know, those sort of things, while the parents were relaxing or doing activities like volleyball or bocce on the beach. And then at 12:30, there's the gioco aperitivo, so a little game, sort of like Wordle or Password, you know, or kind of things like that with the aperitivo. And then everybody to lunch, like 300 people, not 20, okay, that don't know each other, families, all kind. And then we had like a 2-hour break for us. I mean, that we were working there. And then again, the kid club starts again. So we had to sing the kid club song. And then we had the kids playing and the adults were canoeing or windsurfing. And then again, another game, aqua gym, other sports activity. And then finally another game before dinner, and then the big show, and then dancing until 2 a.m. That was my day. This is just something Italians like in general, especially when they go abroad, because they feel like, so they're like, oh, I went to Egypt last year, or I went to the Maldives. And then you find out they were with other 300 Italians in an Italian, you know, sort of fortress, because you cannot get out of those hotels there. Italian chefs, Italian food, Italian bread, everything is Italian. Like, are you sure you went to Egypt? Because, yeah, you just swam in Egyptian waters, but I'm not sure you were actually abroad.
Now that really sounds American. Now you're freaking me out, because that's exactly what a lot of Americans do when they travel too. Okay, well, thanks for taking that little detour with me, Vada. Let's hear what else you have to share with us about this incredible southern region.
So La Puglia, it's feminine as a region, even though until a few years ago, it was Le Puglie in the plural, like Le Marche, remember, Le Marche is plural. It was also Le Puglie, but then they decided to change it. It's just the region Puglia. And for some reason, it's one of the regions that has a translation in English, Apulia, but I'll just say Puglia because it's Italian. I'm Italian. You need to learn Italian, so Puglia. It's a southern region, the most eastern region of Italy. And it's actually very close to the coast of Albania, Croatia, that area. It borders Molise, a tiny, tiny region we haven't talked about yet, Campania, the region where Naples is, and Basilicata, another small region we will talk about soon. And of course, it is surrounded not by one, but two different seas. Now, you know, it's all the Mediterranean Sea, right? But we give different names to the different parts of it. And one is Mar Adriatico, and one is Mar Ionio. And there are about 3.9, so let's say almost 4 million people living in Puglia. The provinces, so the provinces are Bari, that's the capital city, Barletta. Oh, actually, it's Barletta Andria Trani, three cities together that became a province, yeah. Taranto, Brindisi, and Lecce. So Bari, Foggia, Barletta Andria Trani, Taranto, Brindisi, and Lecce. But there are famous towns and areas you probably heard about. Now, the Gargano area, it's like a mountain. Mm-hmm. On a sort of, cape, not real peninsula. Now, you know that Italy is shaped like a boot, right? And the heel of the boot is Puglia. But in Puglia, we have the spur, you know, when you had to kick your horse to go faster. And that is the Gargano area. And then there's the actual hill, like Stiletto Hill, which is the Salento area. Then there's the Tavoliere delle Puglie, another area, very famous. It's a huge plain, okay, so flatland. And the most famous towns you've heard about, I'm sure, are Alberobello, famous for the trulli, but Vieste in the Gargano area, San Giovanni Rotondo, because there's a famous saint, Padre Pio, from there, Gallipoli, or Santa Maria di Leuca, Ostuni, Otranto, all beautiful cities or towns. It's the region with the least mountains in Italy, okay? So it's very, very flat. And it's a very, very dry region. Probably that's why the Brits move there, because they're sick and tired of rain, so they look for the driest region in Italy. And there are just a few rivers and basically no rain, right? But there is a lot of groundwater that is very important. And there are many caves and potholes, okay? And the Castellana Grotte, so the caves in Castellana, are spectacular. I mean, the most famous ones. The climate is obviously hot and dry in the summer. And, well, when it rains, it's usually in winter, but the average is no more than 500 millimeters, and that's about 17 inches per year. That's not a lot of rain, is it?
No, it's not.
So Puglia is the region of the two seas, and they're both amazing, beautiful. The coastlines, the beaches, the crystal clear water, the white sand. You just have to go to Puglia on vacation if you haven't. But it is a mostly agricultural region. Wheat, barley, oats, those are grown on the plain and so on. Then there are olives and grapes and almonds and figs and vegetable, especially in the south. And around Lecce, tobacco. Tobacco is grown.
Really? Tobacco?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that Italy produced any tobacco. That's very interesting.
Oh, yeah, we do have some plantation. Even here in Tuscany, there are a few. I saw it, and you would never guess that's tobacco if you didn't know it. It's just green and lush. And then, of course, Puglia makes wines, and they are the strongest wines in Italy. Not only to drink, but they're also used to fortify other wines, either lighter varietals. And fishing, obviously, it's a big thing in Puglia. And there are also some important ports, like Gargano and Barletta, Monopoli, Taranto, where you also have a lot of fishing boats. Now, let's move to the history of Puglia. That obviously is very long. And guess what? In the 8th century before Christ, it became a Greek colony, like most of southern Italy. And it was Magna Graecia. Remember, we talked about that already. It was Rain colonized by, a Greek colony. And Taranto was, one of the most flourishing cities of the whole Rain. So Magna Graecia, it was so important and amazing. But then, and we're talking about 270-something before Christ, the Romans expanded their territory. They conquered Taranto. That by that point was a very important and strategic point for all the routes between Rome and the East. So obviously it was a big port. With the fall of the Roman Empire, Puglia, let's say that underwent various barbarian dominations, so different people coming and conquering the area. And then it went back to the Eastern population, and they kept it for nearly two centuries. And then around year 1040, the Normans created the Kingdom of Sicily. That was all southern Italy, not just Sicily, okay? And it included modern Puglia. And in the 13th century, the French arrived in the region, so Puglia became part of the Kingdom of Naples. You see how everything is connected and crazy? Oh, I hated history class in school. Can you imagine learning all this all the time for every single place? Anyway, in the 15th century, the Spanish of Aragon came. So it was also part of the Spanish who ruled there until 1713, when actually Naples, Puglia, and Sicily were given to the Austrian house of the Habsburg. So think all the way from Austria down there, the Habsburg. And eventually, the Kingdom of Puglia and, well, of course, the Kingdom of Naples, where Puglia belonged, went back under the Spanish influence. And then there was Napoleon and the French Revolution and Napoleon's defeat. And finally, the Kingdom of Naples and the Kingdom of Sicily merged together. So that was basically all southern Italy. And it was called the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies, Il Regno delle Due Sicilie. And then in 1861, when Italy was, you know, in the process of becoming one single nation, Puglia joined the forming reign of Italy under our first king, Vittorio Emanuele II. Here we are. We made it till 1861. And you see, when we talk about history, we stop in 1861 because it's like, then it's modern times. Anyway, a few fun facts about Puglia. Well, first of all, the very name Puglia. There's a reason why in English you say A Puglia, because it was closer to the Latin name or the old name. And it derives from A Pluvia, which stands for without rain. A Pluvia, no rain. So it's always been a very dry region. But this is just one of the theories behind the name. Some people say it was just the name of a local population there back in the prehistorical times, okay? So we don't know, but we like this Apluvia idea. And Ostuni, one of the villages of Puglia, it's a town where all the houses are white, like bright white. So beautiful and picturesque and unique. I mean, typical of the Mediterranean area, we could say Greece also has a few places like that, but so beautiful. But it's not only because it's beautiful, it's because it was very clever, smart, furbo, very useful. Because the reflection of the sun on the white houses blinded the enemies approaching by sea on their ships. So they could not see the city. They could just see a blur and it was blinding. So they headed the other way. Now, you know, another clever idea was actually the trulli. Now, Lisa and John talked about their trullo in Puglia, in their villa in Puglia. And, well, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's a kind of house. It's very iconic, especially around the town of Alberobello in Puglia. But you can find them in different areas in Puglia. They're, well, now they're houses and they're beautiful and you restore them, they're like little huts. They're small, but they are white and made with no cement. It's like a drywall and the roof is like shaped like a cone. That's a trullo. And it was actually a clever idea because back in, well, it was a prehistorical kind of construction, okay? But then people in that area kept building a few of them when needed, you know, sometimes. But they became very popular, actually, in the 1300s because people had to pay taxes on the size or the houses or just because they had houses, they had property. And that's why they decided to live in the trulli that are not houses, they're dwellings. They're just, you know, they're not real houses. So they could live there in something, in a place that was very, well, sort of comfortable, looked like a house. They had a roof over their head. It was very cool in the summer, but it was not a house. So they didn't have to pay taxes. So from a scam to the government, it became like the iconic building in Puglia. And they're so beautiful now. If you can buy a trullo, you're really lucky. I would love to have one. They're amazing. But that's sort of like they were born million of years ago with prehistorical people. and then got this revival in the 1300s to avoid taxes. And then they were just there and people kept using them, and now their houses. And you have to pay taxes if you have a Trullo now, I guess.
Okay. So that little scam doesn't still work.
Mm-mm. Nope. And speaking of houses and real estate in Puglia, the typical farms in Puglia, you might be interested, Nathan, are called masserie. Masserie. They were not just farms. They were sort of small, self-sufficient villages. See what I mean? They had everything they needed. And now, well, people, of course, abandoned most of them with modern times and factories being built and so on. And now most of those masserie have been turned into stunning mansions or hotels, and they're just so beautiful. And of course, around the masserie and around the Trulli, you have olive trees, because, I mean, in Italy, we produce olive oil almost everywhere, okay? Even in Veneto, Liguria, of course, because it's in the north, but it's on the sea, even in Lombardia, so even in the north. But the most famous is the olive oil from Puglia, and that's where the oldest olive trees in Italy are. Voice on the street is that some of them are more than 3,000 years old. I think that's a lot, but the record, like the one that it's actually, we have proof of how old it is, it's 1,400 years old. So pretty old. And it has a diameter of 14 meters, and that is around 45 feet. So it's huge.
Now, is that one that you just mentioned, Vera, is that one located in Puglia?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's located in Puglia, and it's called La Regina, the Queen.
Interessante.
Are you ready for the best part of my segment about the regions of Italy? Food! Ta-da! The most famous, you know, food from Puglia is pane di Altamura, bread. As simple as that. They have the best olive oil. They have to have the best bread. They go together, right? So il pane di Altamura is like a round, big loaf. The outer part is really crunchy, and then you have the inner part. So do you know that we have a special word for the inner part of the bread and the outer part of the bread? Like la crosta, no crust or crust, you have that. But then the soft part inside has a name, a specific name. It's called mollica. We need a word for that. You don't have that word in English. We do. The soft part of the bread is the mollica. So now I was describing the bread, and I was like, they don't have a word for mollica. How can I tell them that it's big? And pane di Altamura, specifically. And then il carciofo brindisino, so artichoke from the area of Brindisi, are very famous, are typical of there, so DOP and IGP products. And clementine del Golfo di Taranto. Ti piacciono le clementine, Nathan?
Assolutamente.
And we were talking about wines before. Primitivo di Puglia, Primitivo di Manduria, for example, there it's very famous. Negro Amaro, it's also another famous Vino Pugliese, Moscato di Trani, and many more. And finally, we get to dishes, so piatti pugliesi. And if you know when people sort of tease you for the area you're from, like, oh, Milanese panettone or polenta. Well, for Puglia, the dish is orecchiette con le cime di rapa. Okay, orecchiette con le cime di rapa. Now, orecchiette is a kind of pasta. It literally means small ears. Mm-hmm. Yep. Because they're small and they sort of look like ears. With cime di rapa. Now, I don't know. Cime di rapa is something we have here in Italy. I looked it up. There is no translation. I mean, there's a Latin name, but I don't think that would have. It's green. Okay. It's a veggie. And it's like small pieces of it. So orecchiette con le cime di rapa, you have to taste that if you're in Puglia. And then panzerotti fritti. Panzerotti are like big raviolo. Okay, let's put it this way, but it's made of pizza dough. And it's filled, it's like a calzone pizza, but smaller. Do you know calzone pizza? The one that it's folded, okay? And then it's fried, deep fried. It's just so tasty. And then they have taralli. Mm-hmm. They're like savory cookies, savory biscuits that you can eat, very, very good. And as a dessert, they have pasticciotto, which is like a pastry, but it's not soft. It's really crunchy, it's almost like a pie filled with custard. It's so good. Now, if you go to Puglia, you eat, you drink, and then you dance. The traditional music and the traditional dance there, it's La Tarantella. It's famous for Naples, but you see, they've always also been together. So obviously, it's a sort of the same, very similar. And La Pizzica. La Pizzica is a traditional dance. And they sort of jump a lot, and there's this sort of tarantella music in the background. Or you also have another dance, and it's La Taranta, and the name is from like Tarantula, the spider, because they really jump a lot like crazy, and it's all traditional and kind of old. And for, you know, Puglia, we have another very famous and old singer, an old song. The singer was Domenico Modugno, and the song from Puglia is Volare. Now, if you want something more modern, there's actually a young singer. Her name is Emma Marrone. So Emma, like Emma in English, and Marrone, like brown, the color brown. Emma Marrone, any song. She's from Lecce, from the area around Lecce. And she does all this, you know, pop songs, very nice and easy, especially if you want to learn Italian, it's pretty good. But she's also a little bit rock and tough. So I think you might enjoy it. Movies. There are a lot of movies with actors from Puglia. But actually, I wanted to give you a gem tonight. A movie that won a lot of prizes, including the special jury prize at the Tribeca Film Festival. And this movie, it's set in Lecce and in the Salento area, so in Italy, Italian actors. And the director is, I don't know how to pronounce it, I hope it's correct, Ferzan Özpetek. That's how we say it in Italian, but it's actually Turkish. And the title of the movie is Mine Vaganti. Mine Vaganti. There's also an English title because it premiered in the States too. And I think, yeah, UK and Australia. And it's Loose Cannons.
Very interesting. Well, thank you, Veta. That was, as usual, very, very enlightening. Speaking of the region of Puglia, when Alessandro and I were there, I did a lot of filming and I collected a lot of sounds. And I have to say, Veta, you mentioned about the beautiful sea and the beaches. When we were down there, Alessandro and I spent a week in this one town, the town of Castro in Salento. And every day I would walk down from our villa, which was at the top of the city in Castro, walk all the way down these steps, all the way down to this little private spot. It wasn't a sandy beach, it was a rocky beach, but somebody had created like a little flat area with concrete where you could sort of sit and put your feet in the water and then jump in. And I just spent all day in the water like a fish. Whenever I have the I'm not really one of those people that likes to sit on the beach and bake in the sun like the Italians like to do under those umbrellas. And you know, you just crammed next to each other like sardines. But anytime I'm anywhere near a beach, I just want to be in the water all day. That's my idea of being in the Mediterranean Sea. What about you, Anna?
Oh, I'm exactly like you. I love swimming and I spend my whole time. You know what? If I don't swim because maybe I'm tired after a while, I just sit. We have a word for that. Sul bagna asciuga. Bagna asciuga. You see, bagna is like wet and asciuga is like dry. So, you know, that area where the tide waves come and go, the shore, but like the shoreline. And I stay there. So I don't bake in the sun because I also have the water on me.
So you just sit and let the water just sort of wash over you. The tide goes in and out and you just sort of sit there in the waves.
Yeah. The water cradles me and I'm like relaxing. My brain turns off and I just feel the sun on my face and the water on my legs. It's beautiful.
So I'm going to be sharing some sounds from the waves crashing against the rocks in a little spot that I found where I went every single day and went swimming. So just listen to the water and imagine yourself, no matter what time of the year it is that you're listening to this, whether it's the middle of summer and you want to be at the beach or whether it's the middle of winter and you wish you could be, just listen to the sound of the Mediterranean washing against the rocks. And then some sounds from just the evening out and about. Some music that we listened to from our rooftop in our villa that we rented. And right across the way, there was a restaurant that was playing music and then some sounds from being out and about in the city. So enjoy these surrounding sounds from Puglia. And Veta and I will be back to say goodbye. Well, Veta, I know we spent this entire episode talking about Puglia, but I know I have been thinking so much about Tuscany during this episode, and in just like 12 hours, because we're recording this very late at night, it's almost 11:30 in the evening, in less than 12 hours, Alessandro and I are going to be checking in to our little villa that we rented. I don't even know if it's a villa or it's an apartment, whatever it is, but we rented a little tiny cute place that you recommended the area, and I didn't even realize that it's so close. It's only what you said, it was 5 minutes from where you live.
Yeah, 5 minutes drive. And you know the restaurant I'm taking you guys to tomorrow, that's just around the corner, 1 minute walk from where you're staying.
Oh, so you're gonna come and park at our place and we're gonna walk over?
Yep.
Oh, I can't wait. It really feels like a dream. It feels like it's hardly real. It's crazy. I know you guys are probably like, Nathan, why are you making such a big deal out of this? You live in Italy. Tuscany is just a couple hours drive away, like a little over 3 hours drive. Why aren't you there every weekend? And I think the answer is because I live with an Italian. I now have adopted this Italian mentality. And to get in a car or get on a train and go to another region has become this sort of act of God, right, Veta?
Yeah, I mean, it's a long way, all the way to Tuscany. Come on. So maybe we became lazy because everyone has in Italy amazing spots just 20 minutes drive from their place.
You know, that's a really good point. Vera, thanks again for encouraging me to come for a visit. I'm very much looking forward to spending the first day of December with you. And there's a little tradition that I'm going to share with you when I see you tomorrow that is something that brings really good luck if you share it on the first day of December together. It means that the next year is going to be full of good fortune. So I'll share that with you when I see you tomorrow. And we're bringing a big case of Prosecco from the Prosecco Hills for you, Vera. Your favorite Prosecco from Conegliano.
Oh, you shouldn't have. It's so nice. And we're going to drink a bottle right away tomorrow. But you know, I cannot go to sleep without knowing what we're doing tomorrow. What's your tradition? I'm so curious. You can't just...
Nope, we'll save that for next episode because we're going to start talking about Christmas because it's going to be December and it's still technically, we've got still about 15 minutes left in the month of November, so I can't talk about December at all until next episode. Okay, Vera, well, thanks again so much for sharing all this fabulous information. Thanks to our fabulous guests, Lisa and John, for sharing about their region of Puglia. And until I see you in a few hours, Vera.
A domani. Ciao, ciao.
Wherever you are listening to the sound of our voices today, we hope you are healthy and well, and we will look forward to being back here with you next week for another episode. So until then, take care. God bless. Ciao, ciao, ciao.